Jimmy Higgins by Upton Sinclair. Chapter 1. Jimmy Higgins meets the candidate. "Jimmy," said Lizzie, "couldn't we go see the pictures?" And Jimmy set down the saucer of hot coffee which he was in the act of adjusting to his mouth and stared at his wife. He did not say anything. In 3 years and a half as a married man, he had learned that one does not always say everything that comes into one's mind. But he meditated on the abysses that lie between the masculine and feminine intellects. That it should be possible for anyone to wish to see a movie idol leaping into second-story windows, or being pulled from beneath flying express trains, on this day of destiny, this greatest crisis in history. "You know, Lizzie," he said patiently, "I've got to help at the Opera House." "But you've got all morning." "I know, but it'll take all day." And Lizzie fell silent, for she too had learned much in 3 years and a half of married life. She had learned that working men's wives seldom get all they would like in this world, also that to have a propagandist for a husband is not the worst fate that may befall. After all, he might have been giving his time and money to drink, or to other women. He might have been dying of a cough, like the man next door. If one could not have a bit of pleasure on a Sunday afternoon, well, one might sigh, but not too loud. Jimmy began telling all the things that had to be done that Sunday morning and afternoon. They seemed to Lizzie exactly like the things that were done on other occasions before meetings. To be sure, this was bigger. It was in the Opera House, and all the stores had cards in the windows, with a picture of the candidate who was to be the orator of the occasion. But it was hard for Lizzie to understand the difference between this candidate and other candidates, none of whom ever got elected. Lizzie would truly rather have stayed at home, for she did not understand English very well when it was shouted from a platform and with a lot of long words, but she knew that Jimmy was trying to educate her, and being a woman, she was educated to this extent. She knew the way to hold on to her man. Jimmy had just discovered a new solution of the problem of getting the babies to meetings, and Lizzie knew that he was tremendously proud of this discovery. So long as there had been only one baby, Jimmy had carried it. When there had come a second, Lizzie had helped. But now there were three, the total weight of them something over 60 pounds, and the streetcar line was some distance away, and also it hurt Jimmy in his class consciousness to pay 20 cents to a predatory corporation. They had tried the plan of paying something to a neighbor to stay with the babies, but the first they tried was a young girl who got tired and went away, leaving the little ones to howl their heads off, and the second was a Polish lady whom they found in a drunken stupor on their return. But Jimmy was determined to go to meetings, and determined that Lizzie should go along. It was one of the curses of the system, he said, that it deprived working-class women of all chance for self-improvement. So he had paid a visit to the industrial store, a junk shop maintained by the Salvation Army, and for 15 cents he had obtained a marvelous broad baby carriage for twins, all finished in shiny black enamel. One side of it was busted, but Jimmy had fixed that with some wire, and by careful packing had shown that it was possible to stow the youngsters in it, Jimmy and Pete side by side, and the new baby at the foot. The one trouble was that Jimmy Jr. couldn't keep his feet still. He could never keep any part of him still, the little jack-in-the-box. Here he was now, tearing about the kitchen, pursuing the ever-receding tail of the newest addition to the family, a half-starved cur who had followed Jimmy in from the street and had been fed into a semblance of reality. From this treasure a bear, round tail hung out behind in tantalizing fashion, Jimmy Jr., always imagining he could catch it, was toddling round and round and round the kitchen table, clutching out in front of him, laughing so that after a while he sat down from sheer exhaustion. And Jimmy Sr. watched enraptured. Say, but he was a buster. Did you ever see a 27-month-old kid that could get over the ground like that? Or make a louder noise? This last because Jimmy Jr. had tried to take a shortcut through the kitchen range and failed. Lizzie swooped down, clasping him to her broad bosom, and pouring out words of comfort in Bohemian. As Jimmy Sr. did not understand any of these words, he took advantage of the confusion to get his coat and cap and hustle off to the Opera House, full of fresh determination. For, you see, whenever a socialist looks at his son or even thinks of his son, he is hotter for his job of propagandist. Let the world be changed soon, so that the little fellows may be spared those sufferings and humiliations which have fallen to the lot of their parents. Comrade Higgins, have you got a hammer? It was Comrade Schneider who spoke, and he did not take the trouble to come down from the ladder, where he was holding up a streamer of bunting, but waited comfortably for the hammer to be fetched to him. And scarcely had the fetcher started to climb before there came the voice of a woman from across the stage.